Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You are very welcome back. It is 3:05 on this Sunday afternoon and we are turning our attention to football for the next hour. You can get your texts in to 53106. We're also live on YouTube, Facebook and Periscope. You can tweet us at Off The Ball with any questions or you can comment on the stream on Facebook or YouTube, wherever you happen to be watching us this afternoon. Delighted to be said that Dan McDonald, David Snaid and Kevin Kilbane join us in studio. Kevin, you brought a special friend with you for radio listeners. There is a dog in the studio.
There is a dog in the studio, yes. Yeah, Maguire's coming to studio with today. I didn't have anyone to take care of him today, so I've had to bring him in. Yeah, so it's like doggy daycare it is, I suppose. Yeah. So,
what sort of dog is Maguire?
Weimaraner he is. Yeah. Yeah, he's only 14 weeks now, just 14 weeks. So yeah, I've only brought him into Ireland actually on Friday. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it Sam Maguire or Sean Maguire? Which is the?
he's going to bring Mayo look in the All Ireland. That's what he's going to do, Dan.
Sam,
so it's Sam. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's Sam. Yeah. So there we go.
Well, he's a very welcome addition to the studio this afternoon. Probably a bit more welcome than the chat we're going to have today. I mean, the initial thought, you can see him on camera there. The initial thoughts around last night, not as exciting as what Maguire is going to bring to us this afternoon, I dare say. Dan McDonald, you were there last night. What's your initial thought?
Yeah, I was there. It's pretty grim, really, to be honest. You know, there is, you know, progress is a thing, but I'm just struggling to sort of compute the positives. You know, there was a clean sheet. I guess that's progress after conceding 9 in the previous 2 games, and I guess that's something that we would have bashed on a bit to Martin O'Neill. You know, that the point would have been made, well, you've been torn apart in your last 2 games, so when they keep a clean sheet, they're going to come out and say, well, that's a positive, that's something to build on, and that's fair enough, I guess. But you know, there was however many people were there or purported to be there in the stadium. Like I made the point, sort of, it was a couple of minutes after the final whistle, it was deathly quiet. You know, this is almost meant to be entertainment as well. You know, like it's a game that matters, but it's also sort of, you know, it's meant to be a way for people to spend money for Saturday evening out, to come and watch the national team and feel good about themselves or feel good about the team or feel good about the direction of where things were going. And it didn't deliver that at all. I mean, it's these games don't matter in the way that a traditional qualifier do, but they still matter. Hmm. Like if we're sitting as third seeds for the draw in December and end up finishing third in a group next year because we were third seeds, then we look back to these games and think, God, do you remember that game where nothing happened for 90 minutes, you know, and like this causes problems. So it was deeply frustrating. I mean, okay, it wasn't as bad as what happened before, but that's a low bar.
You're just looking for signs of life in the team after what's happened. Like, the clean sheet is great, but you just wanted to see something there, that Jim Martin's going to have these players playing. And like, I think Stephen Hunt made the point that the players are still with them because of that late flurry, but That is a little bar, and it was just grim. You just wanted, as I said, you just wanted signs of life to see that O'Neill could get something out of the players, and he just totally gave up the initiative.
Yeah,
totally gave up the initiative. And like, if you're just sitting there, you're watching it, and like this is Denmark without Christian Eriksen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And
the public know that as well.
Yeah,
but you can't sort of fool the crowd that are there. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
You're listening to the discussions and people walking out and everyone's view watching the game. It's hard to sell that as progress to people.
And even people like Cyrus Christie, like in my piece that I wrote in the Mail, maybe felt as if I was overly harsh on seeing as he got mad at the match. But then I was just thinking about it, and like his selection was just indicative of O'Neill's thinking. He's there saying, well, Matt Doherty's is going to need cover. Well, no, not really. Like, if there was someone who could actually pass a ball in that position, even a Jeff Hendrick, you could make the most of Matt Doherty. Matt Doherty was just totally nullified, and he was nullified by his own manager.
I think we saw the team and you seen where Cyrus Christie was actually playing. What my initial thought was, even though he's going to actually tear this thing, no, my initial thought, can you imagine if you're Conor Horan, can you imagine if you're Shawnee Williams, imagine if you're,
that's a point,
any one of the players,
Alan Brown,
any one of the players that were on the bench or weren't actually within that squad last night, I can imagine that the conversation would have been had amongst those players.
You'll know, that's what they're talking about.
100% that would have happened, and that was my immediate thing to think, yeah. He wasn't bad, Cyrus Christie. I don't think he was great. You know, he was man of the match. It wasn't a man of the match performance because there was no one within that squad that showed anything from an attacking threat. You know, the one shot we had on target came from Cyrus Christie. But That was my thought with those lads. And then the way we finished the game, and we've got James McLean and Cyrus Christie with Jeff Hendrick playing at the base of that. It just...
Was O'Neill trying to make a point by playing him in there, as if to say, well, look, like my options are so limited that I've got to play a right back in a right midfield.
Yeah, what was your initial thought when you saw that?
But they're not limited to have that. There were players. Shawnee Williams played well last month against Poland. Probably deserved to come on and get another cap, didn't he? But you can't say that if he picked him last night, Shawnee Williams, I would have personally, I'd have gone with David Myler's another one. I'm thinking personally, I'd have gone with David Myler sitting there last night, and I think he would have allowed Arter and Hendrick just to sit. Well, tell you what, it's not worked before, and maybe what suggests that it will work in the future. But I think it would have been a better one. It would have made the side a bit more balanced. Harry Arter is not a holding midfielder. Yeah. He gets ill-disciplined. I think he runs out of position, and I think if Harry Arter's playing with a David Myler who knows his role, and you know that those two players alongside him can go and run into holes, they can run forward, that you've always got him sitting in the base, because we play with a back five as it was.
Yeah. I think playing Arter where he did was a statement, but not a good statement in terms of how the team was going to play, that you have that role. And okay, the game in Poland was very low tempo, and I think you can't read too much into that, to be fair. But when you have the player in that position, it was Williams in that particular night, in that role, who was trying to conduct things a small bit and take the ball and get the team playing. Like, Harry Arter's main effectiveness is sort of hassling the guys who have the ball. He's not that
aggression
controller. So when you have an aggressive player in that position like Arter, and you have Christie next to him, we know his qualities, and then eventually you had McLean in there too. I mean, there's no ball players in there in the sense of trying to, like, there's a discussion about, and O'Neill has said it consistently, that we need to keep the ball better at home, our possession needs to be better at home, but the personnel actually weren't there to do that last night. I have a bit of sympathy for Cyrus in the sense that he just did the job that he was asked to do. And to an extent Arter did the job he was asked to do as well, but it was just ill-suited to, ill-suited if the ambition was to actually control possession. Maybe it just wasn't.
He did say afterwards it was the ambition, and he went into a little bit more detail in his press conference as to what exactly the plan, or at least the mentality, was from Ireland last night. Have a listen to this.
But the periods when we, little pockets of possession, I thought we had a feeling that we could do something with it, you know. I think their substitution at the end with Christensen, you know, top quality defender coming on for their centre forward, might have told you something. But our intention is trying to get more possession of the ball, and eventually trying to create a little bit more than we did do. While I thought we started the game reasonably well. I thought we allowed Denmark to dictate the game possession wise. I thought that while they didn't really cause us that many problems, they still had possession of the ball, and when you're chasing it, you tend to get tired of it. I thought the second half, the early part of it, definitely belonged to them. But as we started to get into it, when we had possession and kept it for a little while, then the players grew in confidence, and I thought we were going strongly at the end.
It seemed that solid again, which I guess was important.
I think that absolutely right. It's a kind of rebuilding again after the defeat against Wales. So we've kept a clean sheet tonight, which is very, very important. It's a start, and it's a rebuilding process.
Yeah, rebuilding job, an interesting choice of phrase there. Is that something that you thought it was going into last night, that this was the start of the building of new foundations?
Well, personnel hasn't changed dramatically, so that's not necessarily the case, but I get the point is, and both Dan and Dave have both spoke about it, the clean sheet. Getting that clean sheet early, getting that clean sheet last night, I think it does ease the tension that's been around the team defensively. Going to a back five, it wasn't necessarily great defending last night. It wasn't as if it was just basically getting numbers behind the ball. That's what it was. It was literally a back five throughout. James McLean, you're limiting James McLean by playing him in that position. I always feel that. He doesn't look comfortable. Matt Doherty, I think it was quite telling, the interview that Matt Doherty did an interview in the aftermath straight away and said, look, how was it to make your competitive debut for Ireland? How did you enjoy it? And he said, well, it was different. I mean, you make your international debut, you're kind of buzzing, you can't take the smile off your face. Going to Cyrus Christie, when they asked Cyrus Christie about playing in an unfamiliar role, he said, yeah, I haven't played this since I was 14. Mm-hmm. These are the things that that you do scratch your head with at times, and you think, how can that be? Even the suggestion that Christie was using that position to support Matt Doherty, all these little things. It's kind of like Matt Doherty has played, I would probably say now, probably over 150 games in league football, probably maybe more.
Probably more, even. Say, yeah.
And he's, and O'Neill is saying he needs protection. Like, yeah. It's so patronising to him, like, really.
It's crazy that. So it wasn't necessarily a new beginning. That it was great that we got a clean sheet, and then that is the thing. It's a basic that you need to get right. But the attacking threat last night was as limited as I've seen in a good while.
We'll get into that in just a moment. I just want to hang on Doherty for just a moment here, because Martin O'Neill was speaking about Doherty, and just to give a bit of context around what you're saying there, David, around the fact that he needs protection. I guess this is just a full quote. This is what Martin O'Neill said about Doherty afterwards.
I think that, I think obviously there's a lot of expectation on him. I think because he is doing fine at Wolves, he's just getting used to the Premier League. They've gone up and they've had a splendid start, and he has done well. And I think overall, you know, he didn't do too badly at all. I think he was delighted with the help he was getting round him, and I'm sure he can improve.
Delighted with the help he's getting around him, says Martin O'Neill of Matt Doherty yesterday. So he needs a helping hand, Matt Doherty, PFA Player of the Month.
I know, but he's not even like, the sort of character he is. I don't think he'd be one to have actually been bothered by making his full international debut at all. He's that sort of character. And even what O'Neill is saying there about he's just getting used to the Premier League, like, Matt Doherty was good enough to be playing that team when he was playing in the Championship.
I suppose the one thing I know you've spoken about before, Kev, though, about the difference with Premier League football to international, it's the scrutiny and the spotlight, though. That's the difference. It may not necessarily be the standard, it's more so the the build up around it. I mean, do you think there is a possibility that Doherty was feeling the pressure a small bit too?
Mentally he'll see it a bit differently. No matter what they say, he's playing the Premier League, he's playing against better players week in, week out. That's a given. But all of a sudden he's coming over here and there is that added pressure, because as we've said it many a time, an Irish lad playing for Ireland is the ultimate. No matter what we think about, well, you can win trophies, but that's where you're going to get the more scrutiny on any player. All you lads, everyone that's covering the spotlight, essentially, yes, it's League of Ireland, it's our players and our crop of youngsters, where they're going and what they're doing. But everything focuses on the senior side, and there's that much scrutiny on the international players when they come in. And I don't buy the suggestion that players can cope with it and things like that. Individuals, so many different players are different characters, different individual mindsets, and some players can't handle it as well as others, and that's the way that it is. I'm not saying last night. I think the way that we played last night certainly didn't suit Matt Doherty, because he was so deep, and that was maybe more out of necessity.
When's the last time I wonder he would have played in the game where his team and possession stats? I know that they can be garbage, right? So, but I'm just saying, as for Matt Doherty, when's the last time he played in a team that had 35% in possession in the game? I mean, Wolves would have dominated every game last season. Man City game, actually. Sorry,
Man City, that's Dan, you're right. But with that Man City game, what they did, there was a real purpose to actually when they won the ball.
Pressing, bro.
Win the ball back, and he was maybe an out ball for them. You have to break. You have to try and find, it was Jota and who's the other lad that plays in the side? I can't remember now his name. But once those two receive possession, two wing backs go, you have to get forward. And that was the message. Whereas last night, we won the ball and it was two and three passes and whatever we did with the ball, but our defence was so deep as a five that we were never able to get out. Yeah. So we were never able to get into advanced positions to get players forward and get if we got crosses in, there was no bodies forward, and that was it.
There was one moment, and it was half an hour in, James McLean smashes the ball up and Shane Long actually takes it brilliantly away from his marker. Doherty is sprinting, he actually has acres of space, and Long kind of shakes off his marker, doesn't see the run.
Oh, yeah.
Turns back around into trouble, the move is gone, and I just looked at Doherty over there and he just sort of put his hands in the air, was going kind of a bit frustrated, and then just started messing with his socks and ran back. I don't actually can't remember him in the second half overlapping.
I think the problem with that is it's because it's so isolated. It's not, I think it's frustration. Yes, Shane Long probably, he obviously didn't see it and he felt it was best maybe to turn a different way. We see that. But at Wolves, he's getting that six or seven times a half. Yeah. So if it's a one-off and you think you should be getting the ball, that's where that frustration kind of grows from him. That's the way that I would see that.
But that was, well, overall, the kind of sentiments on it would be, it was just so frustrating to see them just give up the initiative. Yeah. Pretty much
it was a bad night. I thought,
like, you do wonder if the management has kind of got this too much of a one-size-fits-all approach, because you mentioned there with regards to the tactics, how they've approached it in that regard. But I think we've got the perfect example of it over the last couple of months with regards to the handling of players on a one-to-one situation. And there's been so much spoken about and so much written about over the last fortnight about some players can take it, some players can't. And that maybe this one-size-fits-all approach to players on a human level as well as a football level is just something that this management is tending to go forward with, and it's just not working.
Mm. Well, you spoke to Jeff Hendrick today about the... it was in the Sunday newspaper interviews today where Hendrick had a few words about this. It was interesting.
Yeah, and it was good because, like, Jeff is a sort of fellow when you speak to him. Jeff, as if he's one of your best mates. But, like, just, he's one of them where you have to like, pepper him with questions to get at and out of him. Whereas when he sat down with us, the question was put to him about it and he just went and he was happy to talk. So it felt as if it was something that was...
It was just to do with the area of criticism.
Criticism, but also being soft, you know, and
I've not read your piece, but
he's basically just saying, like, we put it to him about what O'Neill has said recently about maybe the mentality of players, and he's saying, well, silly comment to make, a lot of lads, especially Irish lads, go over at 15 years of age, have to leave their families and make a career for themselves, you know. And then he's talking about the abuse that he'd be getting on social media and all the rest of it. And yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Basically, the modern player isn't soft. That was
pretty much his line,
which is ties in with the Roy Keane, Harry Arthur, Roy Keane line about players being crybabies.
I think the problem is with the modern player is so aware of the bodies and what injuries can occur if you train through it. I the amount of times that I would have trained or played, and you look back and you think, oh, look, now I'm half crippled in my back half the time, and you think maybe if I hadn't have done that, and players, so if a player needs that extra day recovery or needs that extra day just recuperate to get themselves right, then that's the way that it is. It's common now that it's done at club level. It's about getting the body right for matches, and that's what it is.
I know you weren't quite going there with it, but I'd actually love to, whenever Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane do go, I think you'd love to sit down with Jeff Hendrick then and ask him about this time, because we had this sort of weird dynamic at the press conference on Friday, the pre-match, where O'Neill and he brought Jeff Hendrick with him, and sometimes O'Neill just likes to, he chooses the player that he brings to the press conference. It's not necessarily the captain anymore. Like, he brought Myler in Poland, he had his reasons, it was to discuss his row with Myler effectively. And Hendrick was brought out the other day, I'm not sure what the thinking was, but we ended up with a situation where O'Neill is almost giving a verdict on Hendrick's career with Hendrick sitting next to him, and then Hendrick comes back in later on and almost defends his own record, and just a big discussion about the deployment of Hendrick and what he's done, you know, since the Euros. And I think Hendrick feels that it's unfair that everyone goes back to the Euros and thinks that he hasn't played well for Ireland since then at all. I think his line in the Sundays was, it's like I've only ever played 3 or 4 games for Ireland and they were in France. But anyway, you know, Hendrick did acknowledge I need to play better in some games and so on. So Hendrick comes out the next day, and look, he's on Saturday, and he's basically playing as a second striker or as a number 10 in a system that's a bit all over the shop. Again, in the game, he gets moved back to a deeper role later on. And again, we're in this situation where Hendrick is just in a state of, I'd say his head must be all over the place when it comes to starting games, because I don't think he's played the same position almost for 2 games in a row. I mean, I know he played on the right of the sort of 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it, for quite a few games, but I think his head must be fried a bit, you know. That sometimes he's a barometer for an Irish performance. I feel that when Hendrick actually has done well, they're the games that you look back and Ireland have done well. But when his sort of struggles last night, they almost personified the system in a way. Well, hang on, where's he playing? And I think even O'Neill sort of has acknowledged that Hendrick probably found it a bit tough.
Presumably the reason he gets brought a lot deeper yesterday is just to get more of a stranglehold on possession in midfield. Like, that doesn't really work, especially in the context of last night. Why did they keep moving him when, like, it's clearly not led to this breakthrough moment for Jeff Hendrick over the last year or so?
I'm not quite sure. I actually thought it was set up perfectly for how Ireland played yesterday. If you were playing, going back to Cyrus on that right hand side, that's where you'd play. Play Jeff, because he even said it in the piece of the Sunday papers that's where he felt he actually was most comfortable for Ireland.
That's his favourite position. He doesn't look happy playing as a 10. Even when I see him playing for Burnley, he's had an impact playing for Burnley in that position where he's been the more advanced midfield player. I don't think he looks comfortable playing in as a 10. I played alongside Jeff at Derby when I had a short spell there on loan, and he was only a kid, and I could see this player, supreme athlete, willing to take the ball. Jeff's get it 2 and 3 touch player, bombs on, gets forward. That's his strength. It's his big strength, and he's great at it. He can get forward and get back. He's got ability to take ball in tight areas as well. But he's not a player with his back to goal or playing on the half turn. That's not his game. Not his game. And we saw it last night. He only got into a position once, I think, where he took it on the half turn. He used James McLean down the left hand side in the first half. I think that's the only thing that sticks in my mind. Everything that he was taking was going back towards his own goal. He was quite content to come deeper because he wasn't necessarily comfortable playing more advanced. That's the way that I would see it.
Right, because I would see, in the context of last night, Callum Robinson comes on and the game has changed because we activated the wingers a little bit more. We kind of caused them a bit of problems down both flanks. And what you say there, I would say that their logic was that they get Jeff Hendrick on the half turn almost as a player who can hold up the ball and activate those wing players. He can't do that. Like, do you think that at least the idea behind that was correct?
I'm saying he can't do it, but I'm saying that's not his strength. His strength, I always feel when I've played alongside him and seen him play over the years, has always been, whether that be getting a ball from a fullback or getting a ball from a centre-half, as I said before, one and two touch. Not too many touches on the ball. He's not a player that's able to go and beat someone with a trick or a bit of skill. He passes it round you and he can run beyond you because he's got so much power to get beyond players, and so much his work rate and his athleticism can get you away from players. That's his strength. So, I mean, I just think maybe the introduction of Robinson came in and he just probably recognised it needs something off the bench here. I've got to prove myself almost in this venue. That's the way that I saw Callum Robinson coming in. And he did great when he came on.
I wonder what he does now. I mean, Robinson has probably made a case for starting, but I think if he sticks with this system, and you touched on it, I think, earlier, like, there are key players that maybe just aren't suited to the system. Like McLean, like, where does he play? If wing back inhibits something, where do you actually play McLean? I mean, will he try them in midfield, but I'm not sure if that necessarily sort of worked.
Yeah.
And if he wants to bring Robinson in, and we'll see if he actually wants to do that, I wouldn't be surprised if he changed something. What sort of reshuffle happens? You know, does he move Hendrick back? Is Arthur vulnerable? But you almost feel like, you know, to inject some positivity into the game in the opening stages on Tuesday, that you do need that sparky player high up the pitch, because otherwise it's just going to end up being slow and very laboured again, I would fear anyway.
Let's hear a little bit more from Martin O'Neill. He speaks about Cyrus Christie here in a moment. Of course, as you mentioned there at the top, Cyrus Christie was man of the match. Here's what Martin O'Neill was saying.
I thought he was terrific. You know, I think that Gareth said he was voted man of the match. I don't know who votes for that either, but I thought he did it very, very well indeed. It is not a problem to him. I've got obviously a lot of faith in him as a player. He's athletic, he's strong. And even though he doesn't always play at Fulham, he always keeps himself in really good condition. Really good condition. He's got personal trainers, personal coaches. He loves the football. He's played fullback for me. He's played wingback. He's played right wing as well too. And he played in there. And I thought he dealt with things very well indeed. Also, of course, he would help young Doherty as well too, because I thought that was important. That Sisto playing in that side might cause us a few problems, and I think that Cyrus was basically the first one out to him most of the time, and I thought he dealt with that. He also had splendid shot and goal, parried away by the goalkeeper, so I was very pleased with him. And I think it was tonight, wanting Doherty to play in his proper position as he plays for Wolves, to make it as easy for him to go into that international scene there, particularly this game, competitive match for him, as easy as possible. Cyrus had no problem playing in that role just inside him.
Yeah, two footballers who just can't be kind of broken up from one another at the moment are Cyrus Christie and Matt Doherty. Speaking there, that's the great thing about Cyrus Christie last night was that he gave young Matt Doherty a bit of a helping hand through his first...
Matt Doherty's actually older than him, isn't he, as well? That's the thing, so... No, I don't think he needed that. I generally don't think he needed that anyway. Cyrus actually played well in Poland, so Cyrus Christie played well in Poland. Another one, I was at Coventry when I was right at the back end of my career with Cyrus Christie, and I certainly would never have seen him playing as a midfielder. Again, another one that's able to take the ball, manipulate the ball, pass forward, get beyond players. He's a player that likes to run onto things. Players play him into positions, and he's a supreme athlete, absolute incredible athlete he is. That's the way that I would see his strength. Again, If Martin O'Neill sees it as a straight toss of the coin between him and Matt Doherty, if it was going to be to replace Seamus Coleman, then that's his prerogative, I suppose, on that one. But personally, I would think I think that Matt Doherty's a better footballer. I think he's a better player. Defensively, I think they both got issues. I think at times, I think they both have had issues. But I think as the footballer, I think if you're looking at it to use them as wing backs, I think Matt Doherty's the better option.
Do you think he was just trying to get certain players on the pitch? I know we sort of obsess about systems and we talk about systems a lot, but I think there's an element of he just wanted to get Christie involved. I think he seems to think he brings energy to his side. I mean, he touched on it in that clip there.
Trust.
You know, he trusts them. Yeah, players that he trusts. You know, he trusts Christie. Yeah. He trusts McLean. You know, you can mention a couple of others.
Some managers, yeah. You know, we're obviously not around the squad day to day. So some managers see the way that players conduct themselves off the pitch, yeah. See the way that they are preparing themselves for training, the way that they are in training, and they have a different opinion of players with how they're actually viewing that day to day. And that's certainly been Martin O'Neill's strength throughout his career. That's the one thing he's done throughout, hasn't he, through his managerial career?
Yeah, is he kind of bending to sort of the public clamour to get Matt Doherty in the team? Because I don't know, maybe I'm reading way too much into what he said after the game last night, but it seemed quite pointed, everything he said about Cyrus Christie.
O'Neill keeps on going on about the lack of quality players, but then you can't ignore a player who's playing brilliantly in the Premier League. Like, it's, there's always seems to be a case where maybe a player who's not on the team is the best player ever in terms of the Irish, like, say, journalists or whatever, like, people kind of will go on about a certain issue. But he had to play Matt Doherty. Like, you can't ignore someone who's playing that well, even if it is only kind of at the start of the Premier League. You couldn't ignore him. Like, with Christie, he spoke afterwards, and there's a few bits about how he hadn't played midfield since he was 14, kind of at the academy. He spoke for a bit longer with the daily newspapers afterwards, which will help this issue rumble on from how he was talking and how everything came about. That's going to be interesting. But it's just back to with Doherty is, he could have been used as a way for Ireland to gain the initiative and actually really cause Denmark problems. But O'Neill, I don't think, had any desire whatsoever to really get him properly into the match. Like, maybe he was afraid that, okay, well, if we kind of attack down that right, Sisto is going to get in behind. And yeah, that's fair enough. But I don't think that means you put in a right back in a centre midfield.
Yeah.
Midfielders are used to doing that job in terms of covering and the rest of it. So, like,
you know, when you're playing that wing back role as well, there's always that element of you. It is a bit of cat and mouse with the man you're up against. Can I try and get him back marking me rather than me mark him, if you know what I mean? So you're trying to play on the wrong side of him, and you're trying to say, well, look, as soon as we win it, I have got to be maybe even telling lads inside you, look, find me straight away. I'll be the wrong side of him as soon as we win the ball back. Then all of a sudden it gets into the opposition's head, or the opposition player that you're up against, his mindset. He starts to come deeper. So all of a sudden, the wing-back is a key position. When you're playing with wing-backs, the key position of you when you're on the pitch, play the other side of your wide man. Try to influence them so they become almost like a back six if they're a back four at times. So you're trying to push their two wide men as deep as possible, and that in turn, all that does, you know it in your head, you can paint the picture, it frees up your midfield players. They get more space and they get more time in the ball. That is the way that I would see it a lot. And last night it was unwilling, I think, both sides. James McLean, I feel for him when he plays there, because you're that hell-bent on wanting to defend and do your job. You don't necessarily use your strength. You're never, ever getting in a position to go and run at players and go and run beyond defenders. He never did it once last night, James. And we've seen his strengths over the years has been play high, play further forward with the ability to get crosses in, go make tackles, go and ignite a game. And last night, because he was so deep, he wasn't able to do that.
I'm not 100% convinced he'll stick with the system. I know they've tried it last night, but I just wonder some of the factors that you mentioned there. You know, will he just decide that, well, he wants to get back to something that maybe suits McLean a bit more and to suit certain players a bit more?
I just wonder.
Like, will Doherty start on Tuesday? Will Cyrus end up back there? I mean, it's a talking point. You know, I think he wanted to play the system and it worked to a degree. And he probably will stick with it because he doesn't change the defence that much from game to game. And the logic would be the back three and the actual personnel of the back three probably work pretty well, to be fair. You know,
I can see that.
I'm just wondering what he will do with the rest of the side for Wales, just to if there is a willingness to address some of the issues that you've raised.
He's probably going to just stick. I think he'll stick with it because I don't think he's actually going to be too fussed about going to win the match. He's probably going to be happy with another draw.
Well, the thing is, was last night in the general context of the Nations League a good result, a draw? Probably not. I mean,
I think it was Joe was on with Keith on Keith's show last week, and Joe made the point of it's if we get out of this and you get two 0-0 draws, it just diffuses everything. Just to, you know, because it's been going up, it almost seems like it's going up in flames at the moment. It just pours water on it and just calms everything. We're not going to win the group. We're not going to get out of it, but it just calms everything ahead of the ahead of next month's game. And that's the way that I would see that.
I just think, though, I mean, we have got ourselves into and this is a, you know, a testament to Martin O'Neill, whatever you say, that I mean, Ireland were fourth seeds in the World Cup draw and are in a very strong position to be second seeds for the next draw that's happening, but that's going to be lost this autumn if Ireland don't win a game. They're going to drop to third seed status, maybe not have the security of that playoff in the back door that we've always craved, the playoff and campaigns. And then, you know, you look at the teams who could be second seeds, you could end up with a group, and the excuse this time next year would be, well, I mean, we were only third seeds, so why are you expecting us to finish top two in the group?
It's still got to be an honour, Dan, to attack sides
you
home,
have to win a game. I think you still have to, I mean, you say defuse everything,
and I know that I've been around squads where you lads have been reporting on us, which, but it has been a bit turgid. I know that when I've watched back the games myself when I've got home, and you're like, this hasn't been great.
Do you think the players are taking that gun? Because a lot of players.
Why do you think one or two of them will be watching their own performances back and seeing how much of an influence that they're having on the game themselves? Even James McLean, or whether it be Adam, looking, say, the positions that I would have played in, watching and looking at their own position more than anything else, and saying, well, look, I am too deep. I can actually take a chance and play a bit further forward.
That's, are they doing that on their own back, I wonder? Or what's the video session going to be like
To an extent, that's got to be done on your own back. Yeah, it does, because you've got to be looking at yourself. It comes around the collective team meetings and the group video sessions. Yes, that's there anyway. But your individual one, you've got to look at yourself and think, how can I influence a game that's going to actually get us further up the pitch and stop us playing so deep the way we are? Because it's no wonder that Shane Long is never going to get a chance in an Irish jersey, and why his goal record is the way that it is. Because how many chances did he get, and how many crosses are we putting into the area? We're having no attacking threat, and it's quite content just to say, I'll tell you what, we'll contain. That is all we're doing, is containing teams.
But that is the striking thing. I think Shane Long has played that game for Ireland loads of times before last night. And you're talking about like changing a system to have two strikers, It was the same Shane Long performance that he played when it was 4-5-1, or, you know, whatever the system was.
The game he scored against Germany,
parallels, and that's the thing. So I think they labour too much on saying that the system has brought about this huge improvement, which was a bit, well, to be fair, like, I'm not sure if O'Neill was fully last night on the, this was a really positive step forward. I think he probably was open to conceding it wasn't great, but I think that they're maybe so embattled by the last two results that they almost have to come out and say that this is progress. And it's a bit what you're saying and what Joe was saying to Keith or whatever. They're trying to diffuse things, that they've taken two such heavy beatings that they're just trying to sort of grasp anything now, and not conceding is like, well, this is what we're going to grasp. But I just think that, you know, the public that come along on Tuesday are going to want more. There may not be, I'm not sure, there's going to be as many freebies going around for Tuesday as there was going around last night. You know, it's a Tuesday night game, so it's not maybe as easy for kids and so on. I just think, like, you could talk about the debate and the importance of the Nations League, but I think to really get people back on side, you need a win. You can limp along and things are diffused, like, you're not in crisis territory.
It's getting to the stage now, we actually need a performance. Need a decent
just something
performance.
Something to send people away from the stadium sort of applauding the team off. And like last night, within 5 minutes of the game being over, you'd forget, you wouldn't even think the game had been on.
What was the situation with the attendance last night? They were expecting, obviously they used the term 41,000 tickets.
No, 48,000 tickets were gone.
Gone, not sold.
They were gone.
What's the understanding there? Is there going to be a lot of freebies handed out for Tuesday night again?
Clubs were getting text messages about those free tickets available for collection.
Numerous anecdotal tales about free tickets. If there was empty seats there, if there was 30,000 people in the stadium last night, we'd be having a discussion what about all the empty seats. So there is an element of damned if you do, damned if you don't about that.
But it's only so long that interest, even with a freebie, will last.
Yeah, and the only thing was, and I have no problem with that, but what would trouble me a bit was that on the day before the game, like, the people accepting the freebies and making the big attendance was being used as evidence that the fans are still on board with the thing. Like, that's a small bit disingenuous. You know, that if 48,000 tickets are being sold, then that shows that there's a real thing. they've been given out. I understand why they do it, but it has been brought into the debate as if to, as an evidence of health. I don't think that's...
Players would rather play with a full stadium. That's, let's be fair with that. I think that's the way that we're going to entice our younger generation of supporters to come and watch and support the team for the next 20, 30 years, whatever it's going to be. So I understand that. I understand that policy, but yeah, I'm with you how it's going to work though, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like all the players genuinely who came out all seemed to think it was a good performance. So we can sit here and say it was brutal and it wasn't great, but if the players themselves actually got confidence from that, well then hopefully it'll show against Wales.
Well, maybe they did, after coming out after a 5-1 and a 4-1. Yeah, maybe it's just better.
Yeah. Maybe it is. Like, we're looking at it and we want to see better football and we want to see them attack and be adventurous and actually show us if they feel that they're capable of winning the match. But if they actually come off that pitch and feel better about themselves,
sometimes it does take that. Sometimes it's not a great performance and you get a 0-0 draw or a clean sheet and you come off and it's like, yeah, we've worked hard for that. That can ignite something going forward, and that's the whole.
I think I would be, as much as it was so disappointing last night, that I am still a small bit conscious, like rushing to judgment when we're halfway through a double header, I guess. And if they can take that, as you say, and bring it into Tuesday and give us something, but if Tuesday's more the same. You have to ask the question of where our standards actually are now.
But there's an onus then on O'Neill, but also the players you mentioned, that the players have to take this on themselves. So they're talking about this was a positive result. Well, then on Tuesday they have to go and show it, because if it is more of the same and they're almost afraid to pass the ball and they're afraid to do things, well then what they've been saying is just...
And that's the thing. We will get into Tuesday in just a moment. You're listening to David Snaid, Dan McDonald and Kevin Kilbane here in studio, with thanks to Boyle Sports. You can watch us as well if you happen to be on one of your mobile devices. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on Periscope as well. After the break, we're going to be hearing from some of the Danish camp. Raf sat down with Uga Harreide in the Danish hotel this morning. You can text us as well at 53106. Don't go anywhere.
Football on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're welcome back. Dan McDonald, David Snaid and Kevin Kilbane are with us in studio, picking through the events of last night, events of which there weren't that many in that nil-all draw between Ireland and Denmark. They're up against Wales now on Tuesday night, which we'll get into in just a moment. But just finally, some final thoughts on last night from the Danish perspective. Uga Harreide had some interesting things to say. He spoke with Raf at his hotel this morning.
Surprisingly, Ireland came very low and deep with the defence, you know. But I think he put Christie on that side because he needed quicker feeds against Pione Sisto. Sisto was really good in the last in the qualifier for World Cup, and I think Christie made a difference. So he had at least two fullbacks on that side, you know, to handle Pione Sisto, and that's why Christie played in there. Mm-hmm.
And obviously you were missing Christian Eriksen, which was a huge loss. He scored a hat-trick here in Dublin in November of last year. Tactically, what did you have to change to accommodate some of the other players that had to be brought into the squad?
No, we played in the same way as we always do, but we just put another man in Christian's role. And of course, there's only one Christian Eriksen. And I think the team did okay. We had our chances, and it was hard to break down Ireland. They defended well, and they always do. And we're away from home, picking up 1 point, and we're still leading the group, you know. And we have Ireland at home, so I think we're in a good position.
Yeah, Uga Harreide there, speaking to Raf at his hotel this morning. Get Ireland at home is probably the key point there. Just. When I look at last night and I look at the kind of whole process of the Nations League and what you talk about this process of giving the fans just something, needing a performance to get things back inside, the Nations League is a meritocracy. You're put into teams of a similar standard to yourself. So, by the law of the book, Ireland are on the same level as Denmark with Christian Eriksen. Denmark without Christian Eriksen, technically, like Ireland at home, should be looking at that game as a huge potential for 3 points. And it just baffles me that we set up in that manner. I'm not sure what you think of Harreide's comments there, but even he's talking quite a lot about Cyrus Christie.
It was a huge leveller with Eriksen out. You can't get away from that fact. They're a total different side. Even watching them against Wales last month, of course, we've got the immediate history of knowing what he did to us in the Aviva last year. But if you're looking at Wales, and we know that Bale were to miss this game on Tuesday, Eriksen's a much bigger miss for Denmark. Everything revolves around him. And I know that but they've got so many other technical players, gifted players throughout Wales' side. Got good players in Denmark, so don't get me wrong. But I said it and I stand by it. I said it before that game, before we played them over there in the playoff. I don't think they're a good side. I don't think they're a great side at all. I think it was proved last night, even again, without Eriksen, without that real superstar in that side, they are not a good side. They're not. There's a lot of those players that wouldn't get in our team. That is a fact within that Danish side. And that's the way that I see it last night. So Christie on that side, sorry, in relation to that point, I don't know. I didn't necessarily see that a massive threat for Denmark coming down the left-hand side. I thought the threat was coming from the other side with Paulsen, with the diagonal balls who were trying to hit over James McLean's neck. So
just think it was a really missed opportunity, because they haven't got Eriksen. He's their best player. He's their leader. There would have been Denmark players kind of maybe a little bit antsy, thinking, well, what's gonna happen here? And it was just primed to just get at them straight away, make it as uncomfortable as possible. And it just didn't happen. Like, they were missing their best player. That's going to affect everyone around them in terms of their own mentality and even the manager.
Thomas Delaney said that didn't he?
Yeah, and they should have just got at them straight away. Like, if they didn't score early, ask them for a goal in the first 10 minutes, just set the tempo rather than letting them ease themselves in and actually get comfortable without Eriksen. And then they were able to play themselves into the game. And they look comfortable throughout the whole match.
A couple of texts in. Ask Kevin why there's no Ryan Nolan in the squad, says one texter.
Ryan, I don't know. There's a number of bodies, isn't there?
He's not even in the 21 squad. I mean, he hasn't played a first team game.
There's a number of players we're going to look throughout, aren't we? Certainly, lads, we're looking down at our 19s at the moment. That are looking. There's one or two exceptional players in there, aren't there? So, are we going to be maybe trying to get them in advance of the 21s and bring them into the seniors over the next year or two? I don't know. It's a difficult one. We've got a lot of players that have been playing well through different levels, different stages, but we'll see.
You'd almost feel bad for throwing a young fella into that setup at the moment, just in terms of what it's like. But
do you feel bad for Matt Doherty last night, that this is his first introduction to competitive Irish football?
No, I don't. I think he'd be delighted he played. I honestly do. It's been something that's been hanging over him like a cloud for a long time, constantly asking this question of him. Perhaps he should have been in 2 or 3 years ago. I wouldn't disagree with that, but he's played now. You've played the game, it's out of the way, and now all of a sudden you can just concentrate and looking forward. That's the way I see that.
Jerry in Cork says, Denmark and Wales are two average teams and we can only get 30% possession. O'Neill and Keane must go. Can't wait for a Harry Redknapp to take over like he did with Castlehaven.
I don't think changing the manager is going to all of a sudden turn Ireland into a great passing team about like possession. Like, no one's going to be pointing for like Trapattoni, and like, we're having the same discussions then as well, but it's just like I wasn't even looking for Ireland to be outpassing Denmark. Like, I don't really care about possession. You just want to see them being positive and actually going at them a little bit and making things a bit uncomfortable. That's what I was looking for in that game. I don't think anybody's turning up and won't be for the next few years thinking, yeah, Ireland the boss again.
I'm glad you say that. You don't care about possession, because it's dominated so much now, and it annoys me how hell bent we are on talking about sides that's dominating possession.
That goes into stats. I could look
back over 20 years for Ireland games, and we would have played through games and probably had less than 50% possession. But I know when you come off the pitch when you've played well, and you know when you come off the pitch when you've created chances. It's what you're doing when you're getting the ball back and how you're actually influencing. Again, going back to the point last night, if Denmark are dominating possession, can our two wing-backs play that bit of cat and mouse that they're out ball? As soon as we win it, bang, you're straight out to your two wing-backs, and then they're actually in advanced position so they can run with the ball. That's how you're trying to play against better sides that's in possession, or better sides in possession of the ball.
So, yeah, it's very black and white statistic, isn't it? There's not a lot of nuance around the idea of possession. I would say that the possession statistic matters in the context of last night because of what we were doing without the ball, because we were allowing the Danish centre-backs to just pass it to and fro, like, especially the third quarter of the game. Like, up until around the 60th minute after half time, I was frustrated. I was very, very frustrated watching them just passing the ball around, and
at
the back, and it looked like we were making no real effort to press. Like, is that something that gets to you in terms of that possession stuff?
Kevin's probably better qualified than me, but I would say the defenders, let them have it. And there's no point in Shane Long and other midfielders bursting their arse to press that high up. There's no need, especially when you have no one following in from behind. It's when you get to a certain point in maybe the midfield, that's when you have to do it, and that's what wasn't there. Like, I know what you're saying, you don't want to see them being able to kind of just play it around, but it was more so as they were progressing that's when it wasn't happening either, which was frustrating.
A couple of other texts in. If future Ireland players are going to come from the Championship when the time comes for Martin and Roy to go, the FAI won't have far to look for a new manager. Stephen Kenny is a manager in waiting for the Ireland job. And Tony Murphy says, lads, can you address the archaic style of football the Republic are playing under O'Neill and Keane? There is no emphasis on possession, retainment, there we go again, and development. It's classic, up and at them, archaic, which is kind of the last...
Do you know what? I don't think last night, I don't think it was even up and at them. I just didn't see any type of performance where if we're going to play a certain way... Where we, if we did go a little bit direct at times, because Denmark were direct, don't get me wrong, Denmark are a direct side. So if we played a little bit direct and you can mix it up, then all of a sudden you're playing in the opposition half, and then you're playing a brand of football that's actually exciting to watch. I wouldn't bother with that. I'd be like, we're playing to our strength a little bit, but we're simply not doing that.
I think the problem last night, Denmark didn't need to win the game and didn't really have the urgency to win the game. So, yeah, I sort of agree with you on the sort of possession obsession, but like the frustrating aspect is that Ireland were basically set up to not be beaten by a team that didn't actually need to win the game. And it sort of created this complete sort of phony war. And that is the game where the onus was on Ireland to try and get in the ball. And not just get in the ball, but they weren't even in a situation to, say, explosively counter-attack, because Denmark weren't really that sort of bothered about it. So they weren't sort of bombing and putting on any real pressure either. And there was a spell after half-time, you mentioned frustration, where Denmark did put maybe 15, 20 passes together. And the crowd just got a bit antsy. You could tell. There was even that small, those murmurs of... bloody hell, like, you know, something happened. And to be fair, that's when Robinson came on not long afterwards and then started to give you something. And I just think, you know, it's as you say, like, the public can't be fooled to a degree, you know, and people come along to the game, they're not demanding Ireland to have 70% possession and have the ball. They just want something to hold on to, something to get them going. And there was nothing last night. So maybe, you know, you can spin it whatever way you want in terms of the result being positive and a step forward. But like, people just want to watch the Irish national side and have something to hold on to.
Definitely.
And I don't think anyone walking away last night, a lot of kids there last night, you know, were walking away thinking, oh, this is, you know, this was good. And that becomes a trend over time. Like, you think in the last campaign, you know, your teams like Georgia coming in and being as comfortable in the Aviva as Denmark were. And I mean, we're about to, if the campaign proper, say, does start in March, you know, Ireland's home form is going to have to be rock solid. They're going to have to beat teams at home if they're going to qualify for the tournament. And I mean, unfortunately, we haven't really had a meaningful win at home since the end of the Euros campaign, when actually we started doing it. We had Germany and Bosnia back to back, whereas in the campaign just gone, it was the home games that killed us. And if we don't address how to play at home, then we're not going to be playing in the 2020 in Dublin, because that's going to kill you over a prolonged period of time.
And that's a huge thing as well. John Delaney, he's the one who got Dublin as one of the, well, maybe not him specifically, but helped get Dublin as one of the cities. And when the qualifiers do start, there's not going to be a switch where they can just go, right, Nations League is behind us. This is going to fester on, and it'll drip feed into that. And they just need positivity around the place. Just need to show something. And that, even like, it was a clean sheet. I don't think it was as solid as they're making out, really, because like, there was times where Denmark were getting in those little pockets of space kind of between the midfield and the defence. And if you've got an Aaron Ramsey, which obviously Wales, he's a player who can do a lot more damage than some of those Danish lads, so that's going to be an issue as well. I genuinely don't think it was as solid as they're making out.
Kev, you're the Ireland manager for Tuesday, say, who and what are you changing in terms of personnel for the Wales game?
I wouldn't be playing Cyrus Christie in the position he is playing there. I wouldn't. I think we've got much better players in that position to play. That's first of all. You said he got man of the match last night. Probably, do I agree with that? Probably don't agree with that, actually. No, I don't think he did enough, but who else would there be on the night?
Alan Robinson was probably the Ireland man of the match.
He probably was.
And you probably Kevin Long or Richard Coden.
Yeah, exactly. I would have given it a defender, simply because of, you know, they were solid enough. I think there's something to work with a back three, back five, however you want to say it. I think we've got players that can play in wing-back roles. I'd probably go with Ender Stevens. I think he's more natural. Ender Stevens, and I'd probably go with Matt Doherty. They're the two that I'd go with. I think the more adaptable to that position, or more adept to that position, I think they can get forward. I think they can get themselves into advanced positions from there. Those two, they're certainly the position that we look at. It gives us more balance. We spoke about it earlier on, the James McLean issue. I think he has to play. How do you get him into the game? Personally, the way I was looking at the team last night when I saw it, I thought Matt Doherty was playing left wing back. When when I first saw it, I'm thinking James McLean's playing off Shane Long. That would work better, I feel, and play Jeff Hendrick a bit deeper. Get him into his position where he's going to have more of an influence on the game. That's the way that I see it. It hasn't been working for him, and even when he's played a bit deeper, he hasn't necessarily excelled. But that is a better balanced team. I'd probably go with a Myler or Williams. I think it's just better with a Myler or Williams, who are more natural in that position, that can allow other players, better talkers, better leaders, and they can allow an Arter, a Hendrick, a Horan, whoever it's going to be, in that position to go and get forward. That's the way that I see it. I think it gives us better balance.
When I look at Wales last night against Spain, there was plenty of signs of encouragement from an Irish perspective, given how desperate they were at set pieces. Like, that is the only real kind of encouragement you can take, because obviously it's Spain and it's a foreign defeat, who cares, sort of thing. But that Sergio Ramos goal in particular was alarm bells if you're a Welsh fan. So it was only a friendly, and you talk about the fact that Bale and his loss to Wales is nowhere near the sort of absence that Christian Eriksen, and how that would be felt within the Danish side. Is there any sort of hope that we can take, given the Bale absence at all, given the fact that we might be able to turn this forward and around based on home advantage and not having Gareth Bale? Is there anything to cling on there?
Yeah, Bale. Well, yeah, it seems like Bale is out. It seems like Ampadu might.
Is that 100% that on Bale?
We're waiting on the comparison. Yeah. We're waiting on the confirmation. It seems pretty. It was strongly reported today. I think even the Spanish papers are saying that he's not got, you know, their information as he is. But we're still waiting for the definitive word. And I don't think Ampadu is available either. So that's going to be a slight difference from the home game. But I mean, we have played against Wales without Bale last October, and you know, we had that situation where Joe Allen and, obviously, Ramsey, I'm trying to think who the other midfielder, and it wasn't Ledley, was it? I'm trying to think. But you know, we know the way that Wales will play. Like, they will be a bit slicker than Denmark, as sort of Kev mentions. So in terms of something to cling to, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, they're not amazing. Like, they're not, like, you know, we're not welcoming this world class side to Dublin on Tuesday. So you would think, you know, there's a familiarity between the players. You know, there's no unknown really with that Welsh squad. You know, the Irish players at Championship and Premier League level would play against, or would have played against, most of these guys before. And I mean, you can turn it into a battle, and you'd imagine Ireland could be quite competitive, but you're not going to win the game if you can only sort of register one shot on target in 90 minutes, you know. So we can, of course, Ireland are very capable of getting a result against Wales, but they need to be a fair bit better, I would have thought, than last night. Because Wales probably, again, you know, you can debate how serious this tournament is or not, or what it means or so on, but I mean, Wales are probably the one team that Ireland can realistically overtake now and condemn to, like, that bottom spot and that third place seeding. So Wales's need after losing to Denmark last month is probably greater coming into this game than Denmark's was. So I'd expect a bit more urgency from Wales in terms of going to win the match. So that's going to present the challenge as well. It might make for a better game. Like, it might make for a slightly more competitive game for people to get stuck into. Last night, as I said, it was just a bit of a non-event. But I'm finding it hard to be optimistic at this point, I have to say. You know,
Wales have got better players. Yeah, I think throughout the team, you've mentioned the lads there. Brooks was a middle one. Tom Lawrence.
Brooks.
Yeah. They started the season well. They're playing well at the clubs. Bale would be a major issue for them. Yeah, but they still can call on a Sam Vokes or whoever it will be, who are actually doing well in recent weeks. So throughout their side, they have got better players, or certainly players that are playing more consistently for the clubs. That's the way that I would see it, yeah.
I would say even the players at a similar level just have far more confidence. Like, I think Tom Lawrence is just a complete epitome of that. That it's like, we've got players better than Tom Lawrence in our squad, but yet they don't seem to show it in the international jersey. But look, there will be plenty of build-up to Wales on Tuesday evening. It's live and off the ball, and it'll be analysis tomorrow morning on OTBAM and tomorrow evening, no doubt. Dan McDonald, David Snaid and Kevin Kilbane, thank you very much for popping in. And as well, to Maguire, Kevin's dog, how's he keeping? He seems to have gone asleep.
Settle down now. He's settled. He's a good dog. He's good. He's doing great.
All the discussion of the game. Killed him.
Yeah, he watched the game. He watched the game. You know, what more can I say? Honestly, we're killing him off here.
Yeah, well, apologies for that dour hour of talking about Republic of Ireland. It will get better, I promise. Hopefully, it'll be better on Tuesday evening. Returning to rugby after the break, it was very positive signs for the Irish teams, for Leinster on Friday night, for Ulster and Connacht yesterday, and indeed for Munster with that draw away to Exeter. Malcolm O'Kelly and Andy Dunn are going to join Joe in studio next.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.